There was a story that Barbara grew up hearing, and it was, she tells us, about her Aunt Pearl, who died in childhood. She was playing with a sparkler on the 4th of July, the same day as her baptism, and her dress caught fire. It was said that she never complained during the 3 days she lay dying. Instead, she sang the song she learned in Sunday school, while Doc Rodham, Hillary Rodham Clinton's great uncle, treated her burns. When Pearl died, people from all over Scranton came to the house to view the body of the little girl who sang hymns. As many times as I heard that story, I always wondered about her sister Janet, who was also in the yard that day. By the time I knew her, she was a grandmother, and no one ever mentioned the accident in her presence. Janet didn't have the happiest life, and I wondered what effect Pearl's death had on her. It was such a compelling story, with so many unanswered questions, that it seems as if Barbara Taylor was herself compelled to tell that story outside the family circle. And when she was ready, she enrolled in the graduate creative writing program at Wilkes University to shape the story into a novel. She succeeded outstandingly, and when she visited the WVIA studios to talk about her book titled Sing in the Morning, Cry at Night, at the time of its release, here's the way our conversation began.
I was a poet as a child. I probably wrote poetry all through elementary school. And then at some point I did stop. I'm not sure why, but the poetry was my first entrance into writing.
And how did you come to then study further? Because you teach English.
I teach English. I teach high school English at Pocono Mountain School District for 27 years. And so I would do writing with my students, of course, and teach writing. But about 8 years ago, I decided to do the MFA program at Wilkes University. And that's where I started to write my novel.
And this is an exceptional program, it seems to me, because we get people in the chair where you are who are extraordinarily talented, but also speak about the faculty and how you all are matched in a way that you can work with someone.
Absolutely. The Wilkes program, I can't say enough good things. First of all, it's given me a writing community. So even since graduation, I have that writing community to depend on, and it's wonderful. The faculty members at Wilkes are actual writers, publishers, editors, agents. So these are people in the know, and they know what works and what doesn't. It's wonderful. And the matching is incredible. Kaylee Jones was my mentor. I cannot say enough wonderful things about that woman. She's an incredible writer, a wonderful teacher, and now she's a publisher. She has an imprint with Akashic Books, which is how I ended up getting published, and I'm very grateful for that opportunity.
Barbara J. Taylor, author of the highly successful novel Sing in the Morning, Cry at Night, singing the praises of the graduate program in creative writing at Wilkes University. Over the years, as it happens, each and every writer we've interviewed who's taken part in the Wilkes program has echoed what Barbara has said. It's a pattern. It's consistent. And we're about to learn why. The Maslow Family Graduate Program in Creative Writing was founded 20 years ago by Bonnie Culver and J. Michael Lennon, directed now by David Hicks. During this week's semi-annual residency, the program is celebrating its community of writers, faculty, and staff members, and all of their accomplishments. A low residency program that is one of the most successful in the country. How special for us, then, that a number of those who were there at the start could come to join us for a metaphorical roundtable discussion of the vision, the history, and so many of the people involved along the way. We welcomed Bonnie Culver, co-founder of the program, screenwriter, playwright, and novelist. Robert Mooney, novelist, editor, and professor. Kaylee Jones, novelist, creative nonfiction writer, and editor with, as we heard, her imprint, Kaylee Jones Books, under the aegis of Akashic Press. Christine Gelineau, poet and writer of creative nonfiction, with a newly published memoir, Meditation, titled Almanac, A Murmuration. And David Hicks, current director of the Wilkes Program, who is a novelist and author of short stories and a children's book titled The Magic Ticket. Mike Lennon is co-founder of the program with Bonnie Culver, and a writer, editor, archivist, and the authorized biographer of Norman Mailer. Dr. Lennon would have joined his colleagues, but he was doing the most important thing. He was teaching a class in creative nonfiction at the time. Bonnie Culver sets the stage with some of the history of the program.
We had a new president, Tim Gilmore, who put out an idea box. And Mike and I were both leaving administration, and we thought that it would be really interesting. We were looking for graduate programs as well. So we decided we wanted to start a low-res program, but we really didn't want to do it. We wanted someone else to do it. We just gave them the idea. But we took 2 years to develop it, and they supported it well. We had focus groups. We involved agents and editors in its development. Mike and I actually had an outline of curriculum, and they basically tore it up and said, no, this is not going to work. So we did that, and at that point, I think there were only 10 other low-res programs in the country, but they were using mail packets, and we were one of the first ones to go online then. So that's how the idea started.
Did you have a sense in your own studies that you could have benefited from a program like this, but it wasn't there?
Absolutely. I mean, it was a surprise for both Mike and I. But both of us feel like we've gotten more out of the program probably than we've had to give back, because it's just been a big gift. It definitely lifted Mike to do the biography of Mailer and a lot more work than he thought he was capable of. We had a support system, finally. And all of the faculty we recruited were like-minded people. We didn't advertise for faculty. That was invitation only. So it was someone who was going to be not only a strong writer, but a really seasoned teacher. And so that's what we wanted, was a mentor.
And how did you get the word out? What did you do when you had this all come together and your curriculum was torn up? We'll get back to the focus group. But how did you get the word out to the population of writers?
Well, that was another thing. Mike and I asked for this huge budget, and we thought, well, they'll never give it to us, but they did. And so we had a huge marketing campaign. And the first thing, we joined AWP as a national sponsor every year, which is a lot of money. And we made sure that we took representatives there every year. And again, it looked like Wilkes was booming when we opened, and we really weren't. But we had that reputation very quickly because they did give us serious national marketing money.
What about that original curriculum? What did you and Mike have in mind?
Well, it was probably more like a master's in English that had creative writing attached. So it was more of an academic look. And these guys all said, no. And it was Norman Mailer who said, if it's not going to be serious about writing instead of just writing papers, then you have to take my name off it. So he was another influence.
It's remarkable that the administration would say, in essence, go for it. Maybe not now. You think maybe not now?
I don't think it would happen now. It's a different economic environment, too, at the college than it was when we started.
You're a playwright. We know you as a playwright,
right.
Certainly,
right.
Bonnie. And we know Mike in his research as a biographer, but he's a writer, too. What did you call on? What Rolodex did you use to find these people?
It really was personal at the very beginning. We started there and then branched out using them as folks who would help us find people. So, you know, Kaylee brought in Bev D'Onofrio. Bev D'Onofrio brought in Susan Cartsonis. Again, it was like that very personal testimony for the next person coming in.
And did the location of the university, I know you're doing low residency, but did it help for Wilkes to be located close to New York in any way? Was geography part of it? If you were in the middle of the country, do you think it would have been any different?
It's interesting because we advertised for a while in the book review section of the New York Times. We got very few students out of New York. We were totally wrong in our demographic. They're literally from 50 states. They were from all over the country. And I think it was the low-res model that brought them. It wouldn't have mattered where it was.
And you were set up as a university to do that, to accommodate students with putting them up and feeding people and having classrooms, right?
Right. It was running a conference for a week is exactly what, because you had to deal with everything, transportation, food. You know, David's finding that out now, and the weather. But yeah, we were running an 8-day conference.
Was it a winter start or a spring, late spring start?
A January 2005.
Did you have special guests or just these wonderful faculty people and the people who were enrolled?
Well, we had an advisory board, and so they were our special guests at the beginning. So we had Colin McCann, we had Larry Heineman, Toy Derricotte. We had some major national figures who were on our advisory board. So we used them as the keynotes and the special guests at the beginning.
Everybody kept going. Nobody dropped out.
We had a very strong community, and I let them speak to that. Yeah. We built a community.
Bob, you got a tap on the shoulder, and did you know Wilkes? Did you know these people more than just being referred by somebody you did know?
Well, I met a lot when I came, but part of what Bonnie and Mike did and really impressed me. At the time, I had just taken a position to take over a creative writing program at a small college on the Eastern Shore, but I knew Bonnie at Binghamton because we were grad students together, and I ended up the director of creative writing at Binghamton. And in fact, a lot of people that you asked early on to come were from Binghamton. We had a real core group there that, you know, with this idea of community, there's really, you know, when you get to a certain point in the writing world, there's only 2 degrees of separation. I know this person who knows these 5 people who know these 10 writers, etc. And so the community kind of caught like wildfire in a sense. And as this program built, it became more attractive to those people out there who would want to come and be a part of this. But what Mike and Bonnie did was they brought people like me who had run creative writing programs, and they were asking us, what would be your dream program? What should we have that would make this more effective than any other program out there? And, you know, fill in gaps that you wish you had when you were doing this program or that. And I thought, well, they're asking for co-authorship here, and they're listening to me. And we implemented a lot of these things, and it just grew from there.
For you, what was your dream? What would you have loved when you were running a program that you didn't have but you could see implemented here?
You know, one of them has to do with community. I think the fact that Bonnie and Mike were kind of picking people that they knew were terrific teachers, really good writers, were able to impart to young writers, you know, what they could or should learn and practice and be patient and be with them. They could pick people that they already knew could do this and that they could work with. And I think that speaks to the cohesiveness of the faculty as it grew. We kind of came in voluntarily. We didn't come out of the cold. We met like-minded people, and we work so well together. It really, over the last 20 years, has become a family. I mean, this isn't work, really, for us at all. It's just something we look forward to. We love the students coming in. We love the spirit that we've helped to create, but is there to be taken.
And, Kaylee, we know you've brought so much in terms of your writing, but also you are someone who is a publisher. You know that world as well.
That came out of this program, really, publishing through my imprint with Akashic Books. That was because I felt that there was such great work and there were very few options for people who were writing literary fiction. So that's how I got involved in that. But I was thinking back, this is kind of funny, my memory, I drove up here and I knew Mike Lennon because he did a documentary on my dad many, many years ago and we'd stayed in touch. So he invited me up to teach a class and to meet Bonnie. I didn't know this was an interview, so I just winged it. You know, I'm teaching and I'm laughing and carrying on and swearing. And then we went to Hoddle's for lunch. And then 2 days later, Mike calls and says, do you want a job? And I didn't realize that was what was going on, was that I was being tested to see, you know, if I was capable of teaching. And so then I said, oh, yes, because I had been teaching at Vermont College low residency, but that was packages. And it was also very far for me from the city. And it was on holidays. It was January, New Year's Eve, and also 4th of July. And I had a very small child at the time. And I realized this was a lot easier, was closer, and I could bring her with me. And she grew up here. My daughter grew up in Henry Student Center, basically, with all these people that are just like aunts and uncles to her. And then building the first, we had those focus groups. And what was really fun was Nancy McKinley and myself sitting down and trying to talk to this scientist on how to build our website. how to build our class on the website. It was, he was speaking English and so were we, but Nancy kept saying, I don't think you're speaking English. And he'd say, you're not speaking English. And so it was really pretty hilarious. I don't know how we finally got it done, you know, honestly.
Christine, what drew you to come on board to say,
well,
yes?
Well, Bonnie invited me, and we did know each other through Binghamton University, where after Bob had left the position where he was running the reading series and stuff at Binghamton University, I ended up taking over that role. But Bonnie and I knew each other as room mothers in first grade, because my son and her daughter were in the same school together. And so that's how she knew of, you know, my work in poetry and that I had the teaching experience. And she invited me to come, and I was really drawn to, well, I would say three things that I thought seemed really unique about this program that they were trying to put together. That there were five genres, that there was screenwriting and playwriting, as well as poetry and fiction and creative nonfiction. And I always thought it had something to do with Bonnie being a playwright, and no, a playwright can't just get it out there on their own. They have to collaborate. They have to know about it. So Bonnie would call it the art delivery system. Believe me, poets don't normally think about the art delivery system, but I just love that there was going to, because one of the reasons I had gone back to graduate school was to try to figure out, how do I go from writing this poem in my notebook to look at the books that are out there? And one of the things that this program did was we all got together and we said, you know, what was so hard for you to learn about the process? Let's put it in there. Let's tell them. Let's find a way to get that out to them. And the third thing I would say has been mentioned already, and that is that, you know, Bonnie said that they were looking for people that were really strong writers, really strong teachers, but they were also looking for people that saw the process of writing as something that could be collaborative and community-minded, and that you would support one another. You wouldn't set one student against another and compete, but rather that they would be supportive. And we really clicked as a faculty to begin with, and we, you know, just loved to hear the new, each residency we'd hear something new that everybody was working on. We would support one another, and I think that carried over to the students, where it made a really strong community spirit for the students. And it's just been marvelous, the number of literary citizenship things that our students have created, the number of new magazines, new publishing houses, new reading series. It's just been remarkable.
Yeah, and that was one of the reasons, you know, when they asked me, what do you want this to be? That was one of the first things, as I said, I don't want it to be like it was for me when I went to Columbia with Bev D'Onofrio. In fact, we were in the same class. How cutthroat and difficult it was and competitive. And there was cruelty sometimes, and even from the teachers, and, you know, the way they would knock people down. And I think at the time that was considered the appropriate way to teach writing. And I really was not for that at all. And I think none of us felt that way in the first place. So we all came together with the same idea, which was this community feeling and not competitive. And it really was very clear. It's very clear with the students. You can see it when somebody has a success. Everybody's thrilled, and there's so much support. And yeah,
I think a lot of things distinguish the program, and certainly the quality of the books that our students have put out. But I think that is the one thing that really stands out and really
different.
Sets this program apart, is the ongoing sense of community. We have, you know, the website that's got alums and stuff, and people from years back are just, they're cheering for the faculty, cheering for their cohort, but cheering for the new people they've never even met yet.
And that makes it safe for you to take risks as a creative person, no matter your genre, right?
Yes.
Absolutely
100%.
Right.
So tell us then about how you got from
my trial, my tryout that I didn't know was a tryout. Well, so we showed up and started that January, and we had our first cohort and our first residency, which was pretty small at the time.
It was, fortunately, because to tell you the truth, on the very first cohort, we about killed them, because every good idea we had, we put in.
Yes.
And they gamely tried to go along with it, and yeah, we realized right away, and so I think we cut them some slack as we were going along, but we learned, you know, what we could keep and what we couldn't, because
yeah,
we had a lot of good ideas.
We had a lot, yeah.
We're reflecting with you all about the early days and development of the Graduate Creative Writing Program at Wilkes University,
And as you tell us, there was such good work emerging, but happily you were preparing these students for the next steps.
Right, and I think that's part of what makes this program stand out is it right away, and Norman Mailer said this, you should be willing to accept people who don't have a bachelor's degree if they're great writers and they have life experience, that should count. And we had a few of those, not many, but a few. And I thought that was really sensitive of him. And then there's the whole sense of the professionalism. Like, we teach people how to live as writers. You know, I remember finishing Columbia and being thrown out into the world with no clue at all of what to do next. And, you know, it was really, that was hard. And so we don't let people go. We sort of teach them how to be professional writers. And we also have outside readers, which is not, every program does not have that. The other program where I teach does not have an outside professional reader, either a publisher, an agent, or an editor, read the manuscripts when they're finished and give feedback to the students. And many of them have ended up with agents or publishers from that first read. And they're not always ready, of course, after their master's thesis, but very often they're on their way. And they may find an agent or an editor who's really interested in seeing this, you know, go the whole way. So we've been thinking, we always thought a lot about that, like not just having a program so people come write for 2 years and then go back to their normal lives. We try to make it part of their lives in a way that carries over and through.
That outside reader connects them to the professional side, the productive side, the publishing side of whatever their genre is, and it creates a bridge. Even if they're not quite ready for it, as you say, they kind of know where the bridge is.
Exactly. And I mean, some days, you know, sometimes the editors and agents can be rough because it's their job and they're thinking publishing, right? And they're thinking about what the book needs. And so they'll say, well, this part's good, but all of this needs to go. And then they're crying and upset. And then we have to calm them down. And, you know, this is the process. This is part of the process. You will get there. You will get right there. This is a process, you know. Yeah. And it's not an easy thing to become a writer.
But you have your mentor there when you get that first feedback to help you see, to help you contextualize that and understand that it's just a step in the process.
We all look forward to getting the word out about these readings that you invite the public for, the playwriting and screenwriting nights and the creative nonfiction nights and the poetry nights. And it's a wonderful way to get the community to not only realize that you're there, but the quality of what you all write becomes clear. Has that been helpful for you each as a writer?
Well, for me, the hardest thing is reading work that has not been published and has not been tested in front of an audience. And I've often used that platform as a place to test new work with terror in my heart.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, we have the terror in our heart, but I do think that particularly for faculty that have been along, we feel like that's we know it's a supportive place. We know it's a safe place. And oftentimes you see your work differently when you read it out to people that have not heard it before. And so it's a really valuable opportunity.
When I don't know, Bonnie, what was it? The first at least 12 or 13 years, the faculty would read twice a year. And it was a wonderful opportunity. You know, as a writer, I'd been around on tour and Barnes & Noble and different colleges and universities. You go, you read, you leave. But weaving this into the program, it became an important part of my writing, the whole kind of process for me, because I knew I'd be reading something. I'd have to hone a scene that had a beginning, middle, and an end, and read it under 10 minutes, which is really good for the internal editor, or Bonnie would have a cowbell there, say, you're going over, Mooney. So it gave a context within which I knew that I was going to be presenting my work to bright young writers, to my colleagues, you know, that I want to bring my best game to. And it helped enormously when I'd go back, and the process of honing something like that, knowing that my audience, my readership was right there, I could take back to the desk at home and say, yeah, take what you did for that 10-minute reading on campus and take it into the process. So it really taught me, I'm an editor as well, but it taught me a lot about self-editing. And not forgetting the reader, which sometimes a writer can do. It's like, remember, this is going to another mind. It has to play in there. How does it play in there best? And to have them there and then take that memory back to the desk has helped in the last 20 years enormously.
And Bonnie, as a playwright, you need to have that sense of hearing your dialogue. And so it has been important for you as well.
Absolutely. And the part of community is the other playwrights and I, we would read each other's work. So we were acting and we would, when we were rehearsing, we were tough on each other. Well, this line, I don't know about this line, you know, I don't know about. So we were having that experience in rehearsal and then hearing it from the audience perspective of whether it worked or it didn't work by their reaction. So yeah, for us, it's vital. The other thing I want to add to what Kaylee was saying about the community piece, if I had to put some of the people, the personalities and different work processes that each of these writers had in one group, they were so incredibly diverse that normally it might have started a competition, you know, a lot of ego. But that's not, we kind of squelched that right away. And yeah, and there were some hopeful faculty who would call and say, could they come in? And we would give them a tryout and they would do a craft class. And then I had spies all over the faculty who would listen to them interacting with the students. And if there was any, you need to write it this way, you need to work with me. I don't know if that person, any kind of competitive thing or prescriptive thing, it would be Kaylee and Nancy and all the, Kaylee especially, would come and say, we don't want that person. And that, and we felt it was important to protect the community. And I don't think Kaylee normally would not have written a blurb for Lenore Hart's book because you never would have, probably would have read some of that material. But because we are part of that community, you know, they supported each other. And you're right, the students see that. That's more important than talking about it.
Well, yeah, to see that really the whole process in a creative community is you know, working together. And so many programs, some of which I'd been a part of or I'd read in, you can see right away, you can see, oh, this creative writing program sees the process as a blood sport. Mm-hmm. It's competitive. And that's exactly what we don't have here. But an important component to that is, I think we've certainly developed this way and the students feel it. We're not being coddled. We're being told the truth. We're giving stern and loving guidance and not told, you know, you're a writer, you're not a writer, or you do this and, you know, you're dead in the water, that kind of thing. I've seen people run out of workshops crying in the past.
We were part of a workshop. Like
Bonnie and I were in that workshop, and I wanted to go out and cry with her.
Mm-hmm. That's why we stopped going to the workshop and having coffee together. We said, we're not going to go to that. But I wanted to go back. Kaylee mentioned, and Christine, the outside readers. We are the only program in the country that has outside readers who are professionals and not second faculty members. And that was the hardest part of building the program. We had to convince agents and editors that they could read student manuscripts. And they're going, no, because most of the MFA material they were looking at weren't even finished novels. They were pieces of novels. And that's how many MFA programs work. You have a minimum page limit of publishable quality. I don't even really know what that means anymore. But that was the hardest part, is convincing them. And that was Norman helping us. And we had Carol Schneider from Random House, Jack Scoville, who was Norman's first agent. So we had some really seasoned people help us, and they revamped a lot of the curriculum too at the end and gave us kind of a rubric for, is it ready or not? And we built into a continuous registration. If a novel wasn't ready to go to an outside reader, we didn't send it, because that just would have been punishment for the student. But also the agent and editor said, we won't read it.
I was an outside reader at one point with Colin McCann, and the novel that we were reading was Marlon James's mm-hmm. second novel when Marlon was a student. And Colin and I sat there with him for over 2 hours, and we really, we both lovingly guided him and roughhoused him through certain, like page by page or scene by scene, skipping through the novel. And at the end, there was this silence, and I remember Colin McCann shuts his folder, slaps it shut, and he looks at Marlon James and he says, you just got the best 2 hours of criticism you're ever going to get in your life. And Marlon just sat there nodding. And he published the novel and off it went.
Remind our listeners who may not know that he's an award winner, right?
Both. Colin McCann won the National Book Award for his novel Let the Great World Spin, and Marlon James is a Booker Prize winner for A Brief History of Seven Killings.
Well, what are some of the things that are different now that weren't there at the start?
So we're now the Maslow Family Graduate Program, and that was a major gift. When Mike and I were in our administrative positions, we dealt with Mr. Maslow, wanted to start and remember the art collection, and so we had dealt with him a lot. And when we first started the program, he encouraged us to write an annual grant of $25,000 to help bring in special guests. So it was mostly travel money, stipends. But then we started the program, and budgets kept getting smaller and smaller. We were encouraged by Pat Leahy, the then president, to approach Mr. Maslow for a full endowment. And so that was $1 million. And that was a proposal put together by Mike Lennon.
Bonnie Culver there speaking about Mike Lennon and the proposal he put together. And they are the co-founders of the Maslow Family Graduate Program in Creative Writing at Wilkes University. Norman Mailer's name was mentioned a few times during this conversation. Mailer, the noted American author of The Naked and the Dead, The Armies of the Night. He was a Pulitzer Prize and National Book Award winner. And as we noted, Dr. Lennon wasn't able to be here in the studio for this conversation because of his teaching schedule. But we went into the Art Scene archives and brought out an account by Mike Lennon in 2018 of Norman Mailer's association with the program.
Years ago, Norman Mailer had a dining room table made out of glass with big wrought iron legs, and it sat out on his deck. At that time, I was the provost, or the vice president for academic affairs at Wilkes, and it was sitting on his deck rotting, and the legs were rusting, and I said, do you want to get rid of that? And he said, I'd love to get rid of it. You get somebody to come take it. And this is out in the salt water down in Provincetown. So the business people at Wilkes arranged for a truck. They brought it up. We brought it to the library, and we created the Norman Mailer Room at the library, and we filled it up with first editions of his books and pictures and memorabilia and so on, and it became, and he came to the dedication of it. And then after that, shortly after that, we started the creative writing program. Mailer was still alive, and this would be in 2004. He came to that, to the launch of the program, and we had a big conference, and hundreds of people came, and that's how we started the creative writing program. And he became the chairman of the board, of the advisory board, and people said, did he really do anything? And we said, yes. And when we were starting the program, he said, well, how do you get in the program? We said, well, you have to have a college degree, and you have to be a good writer. And he said, well, why do you have to have a college degree? And he said, what if you're just a good writer? We said, well, we think there might be a regulation. And we checked with the state of Pennsylvania. They said, there's no regulation that you must have a bachelor's degree in order to get a master's. So we eliminated the requirement. Most people do have it, but many do not. We've had, you know, a dozen people who have come through who are just wonderful writers. They might have a year of college or something, but they're readers and writers, and they've become successful. So we've got a long series of connections with Mailer, and they continue to this day. His wife, Norris, was on the advisory board after he died. She was on it for several years. And Norman donated his fee when he spoke here to found the Norris Church Mailer Fellowship in Creative Writing, which we give to a graduating person in the class. So he's with us in many, many ways. And of course, we read his books.
J. Michael Lennon, authorized biographer of Norman Mailer and co-founder of the Maslow Family Graduate Program in Creative Writing, speaking from the WVIA Art Scene Archives, as we have spent time here at the WVIA Benko Studio this week on the occasion of the 20th anniversary of that program with people who were there at the start. We were able to welcome Bonnie Culver, co-founder with Dr. Lennon of the program. She's a screenwriter, playwright, and novelist. Robert Mooney joined in. He's a novelist, editor, and professor. Kaylee Jones, novelist, creative nonfiction writer, and editor with her imprint, Kaylee Jones Books, under the aegis of the Akashic Press. And Christine Chelino, poet and writer of creative nonfiction, with a newly published memoir of meditation titled Almanac, A Murmuration, and David Hicks, current director of the Wilkes program, novelist and author of short stories, and a children's book titled The Magic Ticket.
This is the semi-annual residency week for the creative writing program at Wilkes, and the students have gathered to meet with faculty and staff, and the culmination is this evening with a very special celebratory banquet. For more information, wilkes.edu, wilkes.edu. It's the Maslow Family Graduate Program in Creative Writing at Wilkes University in Wilkes-Barre, and Maslow is spelled M-A-S-L-O-W.